March 5th, 1865, Lincoln's second inaugural address. Quote, "Yet if God wills that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsmen's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with a lash shall be paid with another drawn with a sword, as was said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, quote, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether," end quote. Just 5 weeks before Lee's surrender at Appomattox, Lincoln described the scourge of the Civil War in biblical language. It was God's punishment, measure for measure, for both the North and South, for allowing the evil of slavery to continue beyond God's appointed time. Welcome, I'm Kenneth Chelst, author of the book Exodus and Emancipation, published by Urim in Jerusalem. The book compares and contrasts the biblical enslavement of the Israelites in Egypt and their exodus with the African-American slavery experience in the United States and emancipation. This is the first of a series of talks in which I will explore the principle of God's justice, measure for measure, or in Hebrew, midah keneged midah. The specific frames of comparison are Lincoln's second inaugural address and the 10 plagues of the Exodus. The term midah keneged midah is understood both quantitatively and qualitatively. Not only must the magnitude of punishment not exceed the crime, but it also must be suited to the crime. Lincoln characterized the widespread devastation of the Civil War as God's justice. All the wealth that had been accumulated through slavery was being destroyed as God guided American destiny to the end of slavery. Lincoln continues to vividly characterize God's measure for measure. Quote, every drop of blood drawn by the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword. End quote. Lincoln's eloquence was matched by the simple words of a slave mother whose 11 children had been sold away. When her mistress's last son was killed in the Civil War, the slave said, "Missus, we even now. You sold all my children. God took all yours. Not one to bury either of us. Now I forgive you." End quote. The human toll for both the North and the South was stunning. More than 600,000 soldiers lost their lives during the war, approximately 360,000 Northerners and 260,000 Southerners. Of this total, approximately one-third died of battle-related wounds, while two-thirds died of Civil War plagues of infectious diseases, typhoid fever, dysentery, pneumonia, cholera, and malaria. In addition, tens of thousands of soldiers on both sides came out of the war with permanent scars, including useless and amputated limbs. The Israelite enslavement was foretold to Abraham. This was accompanied by God's commitment to deliver justice, measure for measure. Genesis 15, verses 13 and 14. And he said to Abraham, "Know well that your offspring shall be strangers in a land not theirs, and they shall be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will execute judgment on the nation they shall serve, and in the end they shall go free with great wealth." In the Exodus narrative, the 10 plagues are a primary example of God's measure for measure. Shortly before partaking the Seder meal, the list of 10 plagues are chanted, Dam, Tzvardeir, Kinim, ending with Choshech, Makas Bechoros. It is a high point of storytelling and singing for children, as they dip their fingers 10 times into the wine cup, as each of the plagues is named. They then watch the wine drip from their wiggling fingers, slowly, drop by drop, into a shallow saucer. Children are warned against licking the wine from their fingers as it is a symbol of the plagues. Needless to say, kids are oblivious to this guidance. Lincoln's linkage of the drops of blood drawn by the lash to those drawn by the sword has a bloody parallel in the story of the first two plagues. The most barbaric aspect of Egyptian slavery in the Bible was Pharaoh's decree to drown all newborn Israelite males. Exodus 1, verse 22. Then Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, "Every boy that is born you shall throw into the Nile, but let every girl live." Understandably, the murder of these children cried out for punishment. Their murder also warranted a demonstration that God had witnessed this crime ordered by Pharaoh and carried out by his people. This message was a key aspect of Moses' first meeting with the elders, Exodus 3, verse 16. Go and assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, Hashem, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me and said, I have taken note of you and what is being done to you in Egypt. At God's command, Aaron initiated the plague of blood while standing on the banks of the Nile River, right alongside Pharaoh himself. The Bible records Exodus 4, verses 19 through 21. And the Lord said to Moses, Say to Aaron, Take your rod and hold out your arm over the waters of Egypt, its rivers, its canals, its ponds, all its bodies of water, that they may turn to blood. There shall be blood throughout the land of Egypt, even in vessels of wood and stone. Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord commanded, and the fish in the Nile died. The Nile stank, so the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile, and there was blood throughout the land of Egypt. We recognize the flowing blood symbolized the lifeblood and death of the male Israelite children who had been drowned. At the conclusion of this plague, heaps of dying fish filled the Nile. These fish carcasses were a stark, revolting, symbolic image, analogous to the bodies of the drowned innocent children that flooded the river. God's message to Pharaoh was clear. God had witnessed and recorded for future accountability the image of Egyptians drowning Israelite children. At this point in the history of the Exodus, God repaid the enemy of his people, measure for measure, blood for blood. The image of dead bodies reoccurs at the conclusion of the second plague, frogs, Exodus 8, verse 10. The frogs piled up into heaps and heaps, and the land reeked. These hideous bodies piled high on the land corresponded to the infant bodies that had washed ashore and piled high, awaiting removal. These wart-ridden toads were a repellent contrast to the cherubic faces of the infants who had perished in the Nile. Don Isaac Abravanel, biblical commentator of 15th century Spain and Italy, offered a novel interpretation of the link between this plague of frogs and the Israelite catastrophe. Let us imagine, if you will, the piercing cries of infants, torn from their mother's protective, loving embrace, and systematically drowned in the Nile. Visualize the piercing croaking of the frogs as they echoed the cries of the Israelite mothers and family members as they gave up their beloved children to ruthless and certain death. Infants pried away from the warmth of their personal worlds, parents hopelessly pleading, bargaining, weeping, supplications that could not even begin to dent the steeled hearts of Pharaoh and his agents. Infants were brought to the edge of the Nile, parents trenchant shrieks, unable to penetrate the palace walls. Pitifully weak cries of drowning infants could not puncture Pharaoh's stubborn heart. The Abravanel explains that unlike the wailing of the Israelites, the croaking frogs penetrated Pharaoh's inner sanctum, his magnificent bedroom, his bed, his most personal space. Pharaoh's partners in the mass murder, his courtiers, and the Egyptian masses were overwhelmed by the sight and stench of the dying frogs. They could not escape the reverberating voices of frogs. God warned Pharaoh, Exodus 7, verses 27-28. If you refuse to let them go, then I will plague your whole country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs, and they shall come up and enter your palace, your bedchamber and your bed, the houses of each courtiers and your people, and your ovens and your kneading bowls. The measure of God's justice pursued the Egyptians into the waters and depths of the Red Sea, and culminated on its shores. The Egyptian military astride horse and in chariots followed the Israelites into the split sea. Whereas for the Israelites the corridor was bone dry, the Egyptian chariot wheels became stuck in mud. The Egyptians soon recognized and appreciated their predicament. They cried out, Exodus 14, verse 25, Let us flee from the Israelites, for God is fighting for them against Egypt. But it was too late for the Egyptians to escape God's justice. Drowning for drowning. The Egyptians had tossed Israelite children into the Nile waters to drown. Now God ignominiously hurled horse and rider into the depths of the sea. On the shores of the Red Sea, Moses and later Miriam led the Israelites in song, Ashilo Hashem ki ga'oga'a susverachva rama vayam. I will sing to Hashem, for he has triumphed gloriously. horse and rider he has hurled into the sea. We have seen the statuesque horse and its proud, erect rider in sculptures that honor war heroes and leaders. For example, the largest relief structure in the world is on Stone Mountain, Georgia. It honors three leaders of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, and Stonewall Jackson, all arrogantly seated on horseback. Surprisingly, this memorial was dedicated in 1970. It was a message to counter the Civil Rights Revolution, striving to eliminate the last vestiges of a pre-Civil War America. The haughty Egyptians with their chariots of war and cavalry rode confidently into the gap between walls of water thinking, Exodus 14, verse 9. The foe said, "I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My desire shall have its fill of them. I will bear my sword, my hand shall subdue them." This contrasted sharply with God's channeled reality, Exodus 15, verses 4 and 5. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea, and the pick of his officers are drowned in the sea of reeds. The deeps covered them. They went down into the depths like a stone. The sinking image was repeated in Exodus 15, verse 10. You made your wind blow. The sea covered them. They plummeted like lead in the majestic waters. Their drowning was compared to both a sinking stone and a plummeting lead. However, the Egyptians did not simply disappear beneath the churning waters. The Red Sea was not their military graves. The coup de grace, Exodus 14, verse 30, by Yar Yisrael es Mitzrayim, Meis al Sfas Hayam. Israel saw the Egyptians dead and dying on the shore of the sea. The Israelites were eyewitnesses to God's final measure for measure. And with their death, God sealed the book of judgment of the Egyptians. Measure for measure, blood for blood, cry for cry, drowning for drowning. In the next recording, I will expand on the topic of God's justice, measure for measure, as it relates to the final two plagues, darkness and death of the firstborn. I look forward to sharing with you this further exploration of God's justice and receiving your feedback. This is Kenneth Chelst, and thank you for listening.